President Trump is hosting Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney at the White House today.
Yes, the meeting comes as Trump has repeatedly offended the longtime ally and trading partner with tariffs that hit Canada hard and musings about somehow making Canada into the 51st state. Here's Trump in an interview with NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday.
If Canada was a state, it wouldn't cost us. It would be great. It would be such a great, it would be a cherished state.
When asked if he'll bring up the idea with Carney, Trump said he will always bring it up. So it could be an interesting meeting.
Yeah, NPR White House correspondent Deepa Shivaram joins us now with more. So Trump's choice of words and his policies have played a role in Canada's election. So what has Carney been saying about the Trump and the U.S.?
Hey, yeah. So the thing to keep in mind about Carney is that he won this election running with an anti-Trump message. Canadians were voting as Trump was ramping up his tariff war, and Canada's economy is highly dependent on exports to the U.S. And Trump doesn't like that Canada sells more than it buys. And like you heard in that NBC interview, that clip you just played, Trump continues to say he wants to make Canada into America's 51st state. So the election there was seen as a referendum against Trump. Carney has a background in banking and has never held an elected position before. And he ran with the argument that Canada needs to forge its own path and be less reliant on the U.S.
Yeah, so Carney hasn't been really shying away from Trump's rhetoric at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, here's what Carney said on election night.
America wants our land, our resources, our water, our country. Never. But these are not idle threats. President Trump is trying to break us so that America can own us.
It's typical for new Canadian prime ministers to make their first foreign trip to the U.S., but Carney instead chose to go to Europe, and that sends a certain message.
Yeah, sounds like it might. Given the contentious climate, then how is this meeting supposed to go?
So I talked to Asa McKercher. He's a professor of public policy at St. Francis Xavier University in Nova Scotia. And he says Carney has to play this balancing act, right, of standing up for Canada, but also not irking Trump, which is kind of tricky. But he says Carney could have a less conflicted relationship with Trump compared to his predecessor, Justin Trudeau, who Trump often mocked.
There seems to be a different tone of emphasis, I think, with Mark Carney as prime minister now. Obviously, Mr. Trump's still talking about the 51st state stuff, but he's not called him Governor Carney. You know, he's called him a very nice man. And I think Mr. Carney certainly looks like kind of a nerdy central bank kind of guy. And I think for Mr. Trump, who obviously likes kind of central casting figures, you know, I think Mr. Carney looks that part.
And he also says that the meeting might be a chance for Trump and Carney to kind of have a reset.
Yeah, but Carney himself has said that the old relationship between the U.S. and Canada is over.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty unprecedented thing to say, but it speaks to how much relations have soured since Trump's tariff war. Carney told Canadian reporters a few days ago, and not to expect white smoke out of this meeting on a new trade deal. And, you know, he's referencing the smoke signal that goes up when a new pope is chosen. So he's already tempering expectations. But, you know, at the same time, Canada is already looking for new, more reliable trading partners. There's reports that South Korean companies are pitching sales of military equipment to Canada, which is significant because in the past, Canada's gotten most of their defense products from the U.S.
That's NPR's Deepa Shivaram. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The Trump administration has been fairly quiet on abortion so far.
But on Monday, Trump's Justice Department asked the federal court to dismiss a case that could seriously restrict access to abortion nationally.
NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin has been following this particular case for several years now. So tell us about this case, Selena.
Well, it's challenging the Food and Drug Administration's rules about mifepristone, which is one of the pills used for medication abortion. It's also used to manage miscarriages. And if you're thinking, didn't the Supreme Court already reject that case? You would be right, kind of. The justices last year rejected the original challenge brought by a group of Christian doctors. But now three states, Missouri, Idaho, and Kansas, have intervened. They're arguing essentially they can't ban abortion if residents can receive this medication through the mail, so they're taking up this challenge to FDA's decisions about medication abortion again.
So that's what the Trump administration's Justice Department wants to dismiss?
Yeah, exactly. They took that position in a filing on Monday. And this was a bit surprising because that's the same position the Biden administration's Justice Department had made. And you might not expect a lot of continuity when it comes to abortion between these two administrations.
Does that mean, though, that the Trump administration is planning to go easy on new abortion restrictions this time around? Because the president has pointed out many times that the justices that he appointed were responsible for overturning Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily what it means. That's in part because the federal judge in Texas who's presiding, Judge Matthew Kaczmarek, is known to be very receptive to anti-abortion arguments. So this case might continue regardless of what the Trump administration wants to do. Also, this is not the only tool in the Trump administration's toolbox when it comes to restricting abortion. Katie Keith is the director of the Georgetown Center for Health Policy and the Law and formerly served on Biden's Gender Policy Council.
I would say the jury is still out, essentially, of how aggressive the Trump administration is going to be on medication abortion.
She says if they want to restrict access, they could. For example, the Trump administration's FDA could just go ahead and add restrictions on who can get this medication and how without being required to by the court.
You think the FDA would do that?
You know, it's hard to predict. The new FDA commissioner, Marty McCarry, said publicly in April there were, quote, no plans for FDA to restrict mifepristone, but plans can change. This is a medication that's been approved for almost 25 years. It's been found to be safe and effective in ending a pregnancy, along with another medication called misoprostol. And it's a medication that's used globally. The World Health Organization says it can be used safely in the first trimester of pregnancy without the direct supervision of a healthcare provider. The FDA here in this country made the same determination. And what's happened since Roe v. Wade was overturned nearly 3 years ago is that half of states have banned abortion, but the total number of abortions nationally has gone up, in part because people have been able to get this medication through the mail. There are a lot of ways that the Trump administration could try to tamp down on that outside of this court case if it wants to, and that's what remains to be seen.
All right, NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin covers health policies. Selena, thanks.
You're welcome.
The film industry started the week with a little confusion.
That was after President Trump announced on Truth Social that he was imposing a 100% tariff on movies produced outside the U.S. On Sunday night, he posted that, quote, "The movie industry in America is dying a very fast death. Other countries are offering all sorts of incentives to draw our filmmakers and studios away from the United States," unquote.
NPR entertainment correspondent Mandalit del Barco joins us now to talk about this. So, Mandalit, the basic question is probably going to spring up more questions. So how would a 100% tariff on films made outside the U.S. actually work?
Yeah, that's exactly what everyone in Hollywood and in film and TV industries around the world would like to know. President Trump's initial announcement was surprising. It left so many questions. Who would have to pay a tariff? The studios, film distributors? Will ticket prices go up? Would this be for international films or for American films shooting or filming on location or on sound stages around the world? What about TV and streaming shows? There have been a lot of emergency closed-door meetings, group chats, and social media speculation. Studios have been quiet so far, but the head of IATSE, the union representing behind-the-scenes entertainment workers, says any plan must not harm the U.S. or Canadian film industries.
The president says other countries are offering incentives to attract movie studios and filmmakers. So can you tell us about the incentives that he was referring to? I know that you have been reporting on this.
Yeah, that's right. And it's true that for decades, places like Canada, the UK, Australia, and really all over the world, they've offered productions generous tax incentives, rebates, and grants to shoot or film in their countries. Some have even built new sound stages to entice productions wanting to cut costs. Trump says the global incentives are a threat to the national security.
Okay, so what are people overseas saying about this announcement from Trump?
You can imagine studios and unions around the world are worried that this could spell the end of their own production industries. Some wonder if countries will retaliate with their own tariffs on American films. Yesterday, President Trump told reporters he wants to meet the film industry in this country to make sure they're happy with his plan to bring back showbiz jobs.
Hollywood doesn't do very much of that business. They have the nice sign and everything's good, but they don't do very much.
All right, so why do you think this issue came up at all for President Trump?
Well, I'll give you a hint. John Voight. Trump calls the actor one of his special ambassadors, along with Sylvester Stallone and Mel Gibson. In a video shared with NPR, Voigt calls Trump the greatest president since Abe Lincoln and his friend.
Who loves the entertainment business, wants to see Hollywood thrive and make films bigger and greater than ever before.
Now, John Voigt says he presented Trump a plan to rescue the American film industry with federal tax incentives, co-production treaties with other countries, and subsidies for theater owners and film and TV production companies. Late last week, Voigt also met with California Senator Ben Allen, who co-authored a state bill that would expand film and TV incentives, along with California Governor Gavin Newsom's plan to more than double the state's production tax credits. Trump blamed the governor for allowing productions to leave California, but late last night, Newsom said in a statement that he wants to team up with the Trump administration to create a $7.5 billion federal film tax credit.
All right, that's NPR's Mandalit del Barco. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, eh?